Welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, keeping levy payers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Hi, I'm Steve West from AHDB, and welcome to today's podcast about herbal leys in dairy systems. Regenerative agriculture, it's the new buzzword. Events like Groundswell, Down to Earth, they've definitely got a focus on this subject. And we hear of practices like multi-cropping, direct drilling, minimum till, and of course, multi-species swards or herbal leys. And it's this last subject, really, that I wanted to drill down into. Now, I'm growing my knowledge and understanding of some of the benefits and challenges of growing herbal leys, and I often struggle to really see the context of where they sit in the modern dairy system. Should we be throwing out our plate meters? How do we manage weeds? Are we okay with the persistency of some of the species? And what's the best way to establish these leys? I'm fortunate enough to live in the Peak District, and I'm aware of a trial that catchment-sensitive farming are running with farmers in the White Peak, utilising herbal leys to offset inputs on their own farms. I decided to meet up with Ben Rogers from catchment-sensitive farming to find out a little bit more. Morning, Ben. Welcome to today's podcast. Could you tell us a little bit more about your role at Catchment Sensitive Farming?
Oh, morning, Steve. Yeah, I'm one of the Catchment Sensitive Farming advisors working here within the Wye Valley catchment in the Peak District.
What is Catchment Sensitive Farming, you know, for all our listeners? I understand it's an English initiative, and what are they trying to achieve?
Yeah, that's right. It's a partnership between the Environment Agency, DEFRA and Natural England, operating throughout England, looking at ways of benefiting water quality, air quality, biodiversity and climate change resilience, working with the farming community.
We're stood, as it stands, we're just between Bakewell and a village called Tideswell. In a herbal lay, what is your interest in herbal lays and why are we stood here today?
A few years ago we were just sort of looking at the picture which might appear sort of post-Brexit, various schemes being redesigned, and we were considering what sort of things could be done on some of the more productive farmland, so in this area predominantly dairy farmland, to try and benefit air quality, water quality, biodiversity, that kind of thing, but all within the context of a productive farming system, so still very much embedded in food production. And the herbal leys, legume, herb swards seem to be a kind of a win-win, really, sort of ticking the farming boxes and ticking many of the environmental boxes as well. So we're working in this area with a group of farmers to look at how those herbal leys would fit within their farming systems.
For English farmers, there is support to grow herbal leys, and there's some new options from the Sustainable Farming Incentive. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's right. There's a number of different mechanisms to finance herbal leys. So we've had the Countryside Stewardship Scheme, which has been around for a few years now, and herbal leys are an option within that scheme, paid at £382 a hectare. That is linked to arable or temporary grassland, though, and so in this area, we're primarily dealing with, it's improved grassland, but for basic payment scheme purposes, it's permanent grassland, so PGO1.
Right.
So that makes it harder to sort of fit with the CS herbal lay in some ways. However, pleased to say that the Sustainable Farming Incentive for 2023 contains a herbal lay option paid at the same rate, £382 a hectare, and that is eligible on the improved permanent grassland. So that's a real good step in the right direction there. There are also various other private sector funding opportunities as well. So the water companies in this area, Severn Trent Water, have a very good herbal lay offer as well. So there's various opportunities there.
We've got listeners who are from Scotland and Wales as well, of course, who won't be eligible for some of these payments. But what are the other benefits that you would expect from herbal leys?
Well, in addition to the environmental benefits, so just listing those firstly, obviously we're seeing in front of us white clover, red clover, yarrow, burstfoot trefoil, chicory, all in full flower at the moment. There's bees floating around doing their work. So clearly there's a huge sort of benefit for biodiversity. And we have to sort of remember that this is first and foremost a productive dairy farm. So this is actually a silage field we're standing in at the moment. So we've got the biodiversity benefits. We've got the fact that this field hasn't received any artificial bagged nitrogen. It's only received 2,000 gallons of slurry to the acre. after each cut. Other than that, no bag nitrogen, which is very useful when you think back to only last year, nitrogen prices were heading towards, you know, £1,000 a ton. And, you know, even if the prices hadn't have been that high, thinking back to last year, very, very dry. And so, you know, fertilizer wouldn't be washed in, just sort of sit on the surface. And these herbal lays contain very deep rooting species, which can send their roots down and access moisture at depth and pull that up to the growing crop. And so we had many reports last summer during that dry period, particularly on second cut, of the second cut on the herbal lays, in some cases being nearly double the second cut on the ryegrass. So these deep roots really come into their own in terms of drought resilience.
I do remember, actually, we were stood in this very place probably about, well, this time last year, and we'd had a massive downfall of water, and it was spongy, wasn't it?
Yeah, and so it's sort of, not only do you have the kind of the drought resilience effect, but also, as you say, the impact of the roots on the soil structure, and sort of opening up pores in the soil structure, allowing that rainfall to infiltrate more quickly, and then it's stored in that soil for reuse, in a similar way to a sponge in many ways.
Right.
So, you know, you get these heavy downpours, and instead of floating off the field and down the road, it's retained within the field where you want it. So great benefits for soil structure there.
We are near Bakewell. As we stand, we're about 1,000 feet. You've been working with some farmers in this area in the White Peak trial. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I say, just sort of going back a few years, we were in this position of thinking, well, you know, what could be done locally to try and engage with the more productive farmland in this area? We've got a lot of limestone dales, which are predominantly triple SIs and special areas of conservation as well, so full of wildlife, often with a triple SI river running through the bottom. We've got some challenges surrounding water quality to sort of work with as well. So an option which allowed us to connect together and protect some of these key sites by, you know, working with this productive farmland was, you know, a really key target. And so the herbal lays seemed the obvious fit, but we realised that, with maybe one or two exceptions, there weren't many people actually having a go with these swards locally. So we were quite fortunate to get together with the local National Park Authority, who kindly put some money towards this project, and that enabled us to finance a series of herbal lays across a number of farms along the Wye Valley corridor, just to try and get a bit of experience with them and see how well they produce, see what the quality of the feed was like, seeing how the livestock responded to them, and generally kind of just getting familiarity. And that has been very successful, and we've managed to kind of expand that now across further farms, pulling in more funding from the Severn Trent Water, the local water company, which has been really, really useful.
Fantastic. So it's a real example of farmer to farmer learning. What have they learned?
Absolutely, and I think it's key. You just mentioned, you know, farmer to farmer learning. This is all about farmers looking over the wall at what the neighbour's doing with their strange looking herbal lay, and then thinking, oh, well, actually, you know, that doesn't look too bad, and having a go themselves, and that's pulled out, you know, a series of different sort of benefits. So the forage quality, when that's been analysed, that has stacked up very favourably compared to the ryegrass.
And that's a wet analysis, isn't it? As opposed
so that's a wet chemistry analysis. The point being that we were advised quite early on that the near infrared, because that is calibrated against perennial ryegrass, was not as reliable for the mixed swards. I believe there are various efforts underway to try and sort of to change that, to increase that reliability. And yeah, the results were very positive. So the ME levels were comparable to the ryegrass. The crude protein percentage tends to be a little bit higher, particularly later on in the season as the legumes kind of get doing their work in the warm temperatures. And the minerals tell an interesting story as well. Many of the minerals are at higher levels, which kind of reinforces the theory that these deeper, diverse rooting systems are actively mining and pulling up minerals from within the soil profile.
What do we mean by the White Peak?
Typically, if we look around ourselves here, Steve, we can see the white limestone walls, and that represents the underlying Carboniferous limestone geology. We tend to have here quite thin soils, so they can be anything from an inch deep through to, you know, maybe a foot deep, but generally quite thin soils, and then you're straight into quite highly fissured limestone, so very free draining, but also very productive soils as well. So this land tends to burn up quite easily during a dry year, and hence, you know, the interest around the deeper rooting mixed swards.
Excellent, excellent. So if we can have a little bit of a look at this sward itself, what are the species that we're looking at? I can see some flowering clovers, but what else have we got?
Okay, yeah, so just very generally in terms of a multi-species sward or herbal lay, you're looking at a mixture of grass species, legumes that fix nitrogen, and herb species. So in here we've got a basis of perennial ryegrass. There's also some Festulolium in there. There's timothy and various other fescues. In terms of the legumes, we can see here, Steve, we've got quite a healthy amount of red clover in there, a good amount of white clover, all of which is in full flower at the moment.
So these are about knee height, aren't they? And what's this bright green plant then that's about waist height for me?
Yeah, so that's your chicory, which I'm sure you've heard of.
Yes.
Which, you know, can divide people sometimes. So it is actually, the green leaf is actually very palatable and digestible. It has good levels of minerals and protein. There's also thought to be this natural anthelmintic effect as well. But as you can see here, Steve, from some of these taller stems, that when it decides it wants to flower, it bolts and it throws up this quite sort of pithy looking stem, and that can cause people some concerns if they are baling and wrapping in plastic, particularly if they're wrapping in the field.
Yes.
Because if you tip out the bale and it lands on a cut stem, you know, there's that risk of it.
It's pierced.
It's something which really you just need to be aware of, you know, so it has lots of good points. It also has that very deep, strong tap root for punching through any sort of compacted layers in the soil.
Yeah, yeah.
So great benefits, but there are some things to be, I wouldn't say to be afraid of, but just to be kind of aware of, you know.
So the last couple of years, we've had very dry years. It's been a bit of a saving grace. So of the farmers who've planted some of these, what sort of acreage have they planted, and how have they found that to be?
Yeah, so initially, all of them just started off just having a go on a relatively small field. I mean, this area, as you know, Steve, we tend to have small fields generally.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they might pick a 4 or 5 acre field and just have a go on that and dip their toe on the water. I'm pleased to say, on the basis of that experience, all were encouraged enough to go on and put more fields in,
right?
In many cases at their own expense.
Yes.
So that's got to be, you know, a positive sign, really. And the comments that we're getting back, you know, range from the anecdotal along the lines of, you know, we hear, for example, people say, well, you know, we put the cows on the herbal lay, grazed it off maybe a bit tighter than we should have done. Thought we'd better pop them on the fresh ryegrass field next door, close the gate, and they all stood at the gate shouting to get back in the herbal lay.
Yes.
Well, you know, anecdotal, but that lodges in farmers' minds.
Of course.
Ranging through to, you know, the deep rooting effects, as I say, drought resilience, and the fact that farmers could see that their herbal lay during that dry time last summer was still nice and green, where the ryegrass field next door had kind of paused.
Yeah.
You know, that is a very powerful kind of
risk management.
Risk
system.
Management, without a doubt. And you hear comments along the lines of, well, you know, this year we wish we'd got 100 acres of this.
Yes.
Because we'd have stuff to graze, whereas otherwise we're struggling. You know, it's
Absolutely. Well, so there's in for a penny, in for a pound, but then there's also putting all your eggs in one basket.
This is it, and I would definitely say that it is the right approach just to kind of have a go, maybe with a field or two just to start with and get a feel for it.
Yeah.
Rather than necessarily kind of, you know, putting the whole farm down straight away.
Excellent. No, well, thank you so much for showing us this and telling us all about that. I think I'm going to speak to some of the farmers from the trial, but it's been great talking to you, Ben.
Great, Steve. Pleasure.
It was great to speak with Ben and hear about all of his hard work. His enthusiasm was clearly based on lots of successes that the farmers were having with the White Peak trial. But in the back of my mind, I was always thinking about what is right for one farmer isn't necessarily right for another. And the farmers on this trial, they were a big mix of beef, sheep and dairy farmers. I wanted to find out what one of these dairy farmers had to say about the trial. I discovered a while ago that Robert Thornhill had been involved, and I knew that he'd been growing herbal leys for some years now, many years before the trial. Now, Rob gained his Nuffield Fellowship back in 2013, and he travelled much of the world in search of ideas to improve the sustainability of pasture-based dairying, specifically with a focus on reducing artificial inputs. I know he's the type of farmer who'd have a valuable input into this discussion, so I thought I'd pop over to visit him.
Rob, we're here in Great Longston. What are you farming up here?
We're dairy farming on a pasture-based system. We're milking 280 crossbred cows on a spring calving system. It's a completely closed herd. We are about as disease-free as you can get, a personal ambition of mine. And so everything's reared. I've been doing that for about 23 years after moving from a year-round pedigree Holstein system. I just found grazing got into my blood, and that's what I was trying to do with the existing herd. And I didn't enjoy summer feeding, and after a spell working in New Zealand, I decided to give it a go.
So you've got plate meters, you've got paddocks, you've got tracks.
Yep, that's right.
And you've got dry stone walls.
Yes, it's probably not the landscape you'd expect to find this sort of system in. So as you've quite rightly said, Steve, we've got dry stone walls, fairly small traditional field sizes, every conceivable shape of field as well, rolling landscape. So yes, integrating the track system and the paddock system into that is, well, it was quite a challenge. Electric fencing plays a huge part, but we're used to it. So allocations aren't necessarily on a single field or paddock basis. And it's not like an arable conversion where you can just sit down with a pad and a pencil and draw it all out.
We've heard from Ben Rogers earlier on about the White Peak trials, but you've been growing herbal leys now for a little while, haven't you? A little bit longer.
Yeah, I've been dabbling for probably 10 or 11 years now. And it really started as a result of when I was awarded a Nuffield Farming Scholarship in 2013 and I went around the world trying to find alternatives to the nitrogen-fueled ryegrass systems that we were linked to. So I was looking at sustainable forages and grazing techniques, and I was also trying to find where there's anything I could learn from the then-emerging regenerative agriculture movement, which most people hadn't heard of, even just in that short time period. Yeah. Nearly everybody was a beef farmer, and they were using it to improve the soil. And I saw some outstanding examples of how it can be done. But I wanted to know whether any of that could overlap into the dairy. But one of the strongest underlying themes that I took away from nearly everywhere I traveled to was diversity. So pasture diversity, certainly for one thing. Just the theory of it is just makes so much sense. So you've got below ground, you've got different rooting systems. Some are deep tap rooting, some are fibrous, but within those two categories, so many different types and patterns of rooting and depths. And so each pulls up a different mineral profile, and then above ground, that's also reflected in the diversity and slightly different profiles for nutritional status. And then hopefully something for the environment as well.
Right. In the context of the White Peak trials, what have you been trying here?
So for the White Peak trial, what we were trying to find was, could there be an overlap for commercial production in agriculture and the environment? Because that's what matters. And you know, when everybody talks about sustainability, the first line of sustainability is financial viability.
Yes.
Because without that, we can't continue to do what we do, either earn a living or continue to try and look after the land. So that's paramount. So what we were trying to see is, on this farm, because we're a grazing dairy farm, whether we could provide for the environment through the flowering of different species and still maintain production. So we took a 6-acre field and we reseeded that with a chosen herbal lay, which I'll talk about in a little bit. And every time we graze it, if we're on an approximately 3-week rotation, we'll take a quarter of that field and skip it and then come back to it next time. And that rotates around. So a different quarter has a 6-week break. Now, 6 weeks is probably longer than we would like, really, but that just fitted in with grazing the land next door on our normal rotation. And because it was only a 6-acre field, it wasn't feasible to go into a quarter.
Right, yes.
With the whole herd, that would have been too complex. So we decided 6 weeks would be interesting enough.
I see. And how has that been?
I think it's produced the results we were expecting, really, because there's still a significant amount of grass in the herbal lay, and certainly in the mixture that we chose for the White Peak trial, there's Timothy and Coxfoot. And as most pasture farmers would appreciate, that after about 6 weeks, those are fairly mature, those grasses. So clearly we don't hit the residuals that we would on a 3-week, 3-leaf ryegrass system. And you're going to get, there's less energy in it, so the milk can go down. However, right, because of what we're presenting them, that is only 1/3 of that allocation. If I hope people are following this, because you've got a quarter that is on a 6-week and then 2/4 that are on the 3-week. So they're very high in terms of energy. So that helped to balance it. So I think if we'd moved on to 6 weeks, yes, we'd have absolutely depleted the lactation.
Right.
But that drop was mitigated by the offset of grazing the shorter stuff.
I see. When you came up with that, of course, that was when the SFI restrictions were fairly tight.
Fairly stringent.
Yeah. There's been a slight reduction in that, you know. Is that something that you think makes it more feasible?
I think so. It's interesting when we host some farm visits and we have you know, members of DEFRA here. There have been so many changes just in this calendar year that I can hardly keep up with it. The encouraging thing is it's becoming more flexible, because people who are making these policies are realising to entice people to take them up, they have to be more flexible or less onerous in certain restrictions. But earlier on, they were quite onerous, and as yet I haven't taken any payments for putting herbal lays in. It's all my own experiments at the moment. The White Peak trial was a funded one for establishment.
Yes.
But I haven't got any area-based payments yet, because, for example, early on they were talking about having a period between, I think, the 1st of May and the end of July to shut up for 5 weeks and let them flower. Well, if you've got a substantial area of your milking platform on that and you're going to leave it for 5 weeks, that's quite, that's potentially quite detrimental to milk production. I mean, I've taken them out to sort of nearly 5 weeks, 4.5, but 5 weeks on my own experiments. And it's worked quite well, but I wouldn't want my hands tied to that necessarily over a large area.
Well, of course, one of the benefits that Ben was talking about was their ability to grow in droughts. And I guess if you've got a drought period just at that time where you could really use that dry matter, that's going to be a challenge, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And so you need the flexibility to go into them when you want.
Yeah.
Really. So I can't comment on the current situation, but I think there has been some easement of those restrictions, which would be very welcome.
Yes.
Or at least if you can quickly get a derogation to alter that if need be.
I understand. Okay. We're stood in the herbal lay right now. When did you put this in?
This one went in September last year, so that's 2022. Very dry season, as everybody will recall, and I was trying to beat the rain that was coming, or I was hoping was coming. And the preparation for this was, we did spray it off with glyphosate. So this was land that I've only just got tenure on, and it's effectively been ranched for about 50 years. So it was nothing like a milking pasture. So we did spray it with glyphosate. And can I say that I left some control strips?
Yes.
That, as everybody knows, if you're working late with bright sunshine and drought-browned grass, you can't always see where you're going. So it proved actually that it was a very worthwhile exercise, although I really don't enjoy boom spraying and would prefer not to.
Yes.
But I felt it was the right decision, and the strips I missed, yeah, that proves it was the right decision. So we sprayed it off and we didn't invert it. We've got very stony ground here.
Yeah.
And a lot of big limestone rock underneath. And for a variety of reasons, from stock carrying capacity to risk. Generally, I don't like doing an inversion and turning fertility upside down. So we sprayed it off. It was pretty short. And then we came over it and just sort of tickled the top with a power harrow.
Right.
All we needed was a tiny little bit of tilth to get the seed on. A lot of small seed in these mixtures. But we had a phenomenal take, even though when I did it, it didn't rain for about 2 weeks afterwards, even though it had forecast some rain coming. And that's one of the problems with an autumn reseed, is that when you've got a lot of bare ground, you're in the weed season for airborne seeds.
Of course.
And one thing we do suffer from round here is airborne seed of ragwort and thistles, spear thistles.
Okay, okay. So you've had your fair share of weeds.
Yes. We've mown them off now. But interestingly, you know, the thistle flowers are fantastic. They're very nice. And when you walk through them in an early morning with no breeze, you can smell them. And the insect life on them is phenomenal. And so I do leave them till just pre-seeding for two reasons. One, because I actually like the flowers and the insect life on them. And secondly, in the hope that they put all their energy into the reproduction. And if you get them just before viable seed time, you're probably going to have a significant effect on exhausting them.
Yep, I see.
And I'm sure people will be aware that your opportunities for herbicide use on a herbal lay are basically zero, apart from spot spraying, and you'll still get a bit of collateral damage with that. So these plants are really, really sensitive to herbicide. So there's nothing in a herbal lay that you can use for a blanket treatment. That okay. is something to be aware of.
So that's a bit of a pullback. In terms of this field, what made you choose a herbal lay for this? Was it just to try it, or was
just
it...
yes? And also, I say because I just got long-term tenure on this ground, and I thought, well, if I'm going to do a reseed, I'm still really interested in trying them to see what will last and what arrives. So I thought we'd have a go. And the thing I have found in the past, going back to milk production and grazing intervals, is that when you push these out to a later date, past your optimum ryegrass target date, you can still get comparable milk yield because there are so many different species in vegetative stage at that time, a lot of leaf. So even if the grass portion will be too mature for optimum milk production on its own, it's sort of overwashed with a lot of other stuff as well. And that gives an element of flexibility. The field we're walking in now will be about 800 feet above sea level.
I see. Yeah, we're not starved of oxygen just yet.
No. So I think compared to many, still fairly lowland.
No. And you've cut this one, have you?
This was pre-mown.
Right.
So disc mowed before we put the cows into graze. To try and tidy it up, maximise intakes as well.
Right.
Reduce selection. It's a dangerous game of potentially being aesthetically addicted to grooming your paddocks if you're not careful.
Yeah. No, I bet.
But then if it's a dry spell and it comes wet, then you get a really good flush of grass, very even.
Looking at this, you've got quite a bit of ribgrass, plantain.
Yes. Yep. That had a really good take when we seeded in here. So, and it is one of the more persistent things generally, and it's something I really like. It's got a similar nutritional profile to perennial ryegrass.
Yep.
Although it's much lower in dry matter. And that's one of the things with the herbal lays that you've got to consider. You look at them and they can produce a huge amount of bulk, but the dry matter percentage is low.
Right.
The percentage is low. So you get a very volumetric looking crop, but if you dry it out, it shrivels to nearly nothing. Having said that, it can still produce a lot of dry matter, which is the thing that we're interested in.
Yep.
So it can be a little bit deceiving when you look at it visually.
And how do you monitor dry matter then? So for allocations, we're way off grazing this again,
oh, yes,
aren't we?
Yes.
This is about, what would it be, about 1700?
It's difficult to, it plates much higher because of the species in it,
yep,
than a ryegrass. Our plate meter is calibrated to perennial ryegrass.
Right.
And it's one of my tasks that I need to do very soon is to just try and find out whether there's an equation I can apply to it for plate meter in the herbal lay. I'm
right.
not saying I'll be able to do that, but it'd be nice to see the difference. But some of these species hold the plate up higher. And I think also, as I've already said, because it's lower in dry matter percentage, I think that's deceiving for the plate meter. So we tend to know on an area basis what we're doing. When I'm doing strict measurements, I'll use a quadrat and I'll cut and weigh the fresh and then dry a proportion of it to get a percentage.
Right.
I've done some of that in the past, and it's been quite interesting. And I ought to do some more, but you get a sort of feel for it anyway. And ultimately, the cows are the ultimate laboratory. And and also, they're the ones that tell you, plate meter or cutting and weighing, it's all an estimate to try and guide us. But ultimately, you have to look at what the cows are doing, how they're behaving while grazing, and the residual they leave behind.
I see. So if they're clearing up and you don't quite have the milk in the tank that you're expecting, then you perhaps have under-allocated.
Yeah. Correct, yes. Yeah. And also it depends what you're trying to achieve. So there'll be times of the year when you really want to get a very tight residual to get good regrowth. But at peak growth, you might want to leave that higher. So sometimes we'll probably skim over it. This year we had an explosion of growth that came quite late. So we skimmed over the farm. I wasn't too worried because the amount of lignin was very low in the stubble.
Yeah.
So we cleared it up the next time.
Perfect.
So that's not too bad. And what we're trying to do on this platform, which is quite unusual, is we're trying not to cut anything because we're highly stocked at the same high stocking rate throughout the year.
Right.
And off the milking platform, we don't take any winter feed.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. Still on establishments,
yep.
Rob. You've chosen to establish this in that way, on this particular lay.
Yeah.
What else have you tried and what's worked and what hasn't?
Well, on the White Peak trial, we did a no spray inversion. So we ploughed it and then power harrowed. So a more traditional established method because I wanted to, because it was a trial, I wanted to give it the best chance to go. We had similar weed infestations on that, which was quite a challenge. But other people in the White Peak trial have had tremendous success with varying direct drilling or overseeding methods. But it's like any crop establishment, you're beheld to the weather conditions at the time. And even if you do a textbook reseed, as I've done several, and then you've been left in a dry period, and you get a lot of competitive weed seed dropping on, and then it's late germinating, you've got a challenge. I did one in the spring in 2018, and if you remember, 2018 was a really, really dry year.
It was.
And this is not a spring reseeding farm, and I've now decided I won't be doing any more, but this was a time when I was still trying. And I put it in, and we got one shower of rain, and then that was it, nothing. And I looked at a brown field, and it was just brown for ages, and it started turning green, and I ran into it and found it just getting colonised by shepherd's purse that had free rein. So I thought, oh, this isn't looking good. And then all of a sudden, it exploded and it turned green. And it was probably the greenest patch in the whole region, actually. But interestingly, there was no grass in it in that first spring. It was all the broad leaves, and right. It was absolutely phenomenal. And it did finally come and swamp out everything else. But that was quite interesting, but it was also quite scary. I wouldn't like a lot of the farm down like that. But it's, that did very well. And I say it was very, very green and very lush.
A lot of farmers are reporting that they're uncertain about the persistency, should we say, of some of the species in these lays. How have you found the persistency of herbal lays?
Yeah, they're very right to be thinking that way. And the truth is, the persistency doesn't endure. So you'll probably get a small drop off in year three, and by year four, it'll look quite different, which is disappointing. And there are a few theories behind this and perhaps how to reduce the decline in persistency of the diversity of species. Some people say that it's probably high fertility land that doesn't like it, but the land we're standing on, I would say, is quite low fertility. I haven't soil tested it yet, and I will do in this back end. But because of its history, it will not be the fertility of my ground over the wall. So this is a bit early to say, so this will be one experiment, so I can't comment on that. On my travels, there was people telling me that if you stuck to the same grazing intervals as we do generally on this farm, you will select things that will persist best under that grazing interval. So yeah. They say if you can be flexible and alter them, that could help. But as we've already discussed, that could be a challenge in the dairy system.
Of course.
But generally, even somebody locally who grows them on a arable rotation, really, well, on a cropping rotation, by year four, he says they're ready to be changed. So that seems to be a commonality of these things. And whether it's to do with the particular cultivars we're using, I don't know. So what I find, this one we're standing in now, what I'm looking to do is make sure that if the species disappear and I don't want to reseed, which is how I feel, I want the underpinning grass to be of a decent type. So this doesn't have Coxfoot and Timothy in. There's a place for it, but at the moment I'm not convinced that I want it here in vast quantities on my farm. So I've taken here my normal late-heading perennial ryegrass and white clover mix, and I've bolstered it with white clover and then added into that a selection of herbs, which includes a lot of extra white clover and red clover, and then plantain, yarrow, sainfoin, burnet and sheep's parsley. And I think I've got everything in there.
Yeah, no, well, I've seen a lot of the leaves. I can see some yarrow down there.
Yes. The yarrow is something that does persist very well. And I know some people think it's a weed, and I'm not sure whether it makes any contribution to grazing. It tastes a little bit bitter to me, but it's a good ground-covering plant. And the white flowers last for ages. And I just think, well, it is a bit of diversity that we talked about before. It's got a very fibrous root structure. So I'm quite happy to chuck a bit of that in. And it's certainly better having that in the bottom, I think, than some of the fine-leafed weed grasses that are non-productive but are very good at competing with a sward. There's no doubt that it's become very fashionable, and everybody's talking about herbal lazy. Even people outside the industry recognise them. And there's a slight concern with that there are a lot of people peddling them as being a fix-all.
Yes.
And sort of a panacea that they'll grow when it's not raining and provide you with this, and you don't need any fertiliser, etc., etc. It's a nice story, but perhaps not always true. So I've just taken the decision, or we have as a team, because we've discovered that on this new land that's not particularly fertile, we've had really depressed growth on the herbal lays that haven't had fertiliser. So on one field, we're going to fertilise them. And they get regular slurry after we chase the cows around the dribble bar. And we're gonna fertilise 1.5 fields, and the half field is going to be the interesting one, because we'll be able to measure the difference in production, but also longer term, see what difference that might make to the makeup of the sward. And that's something I haven't done yet. As so far with all my experiments, I've never put artificial nitrogen on any of the swards, because I just think it would be depressing legume performance.
I see.
And on a high fertility field, you can get really good production out of them. So you still need to look after the soil, and fertility is paramount in everything that you grow. But it's interesting. We had a dry spell early on this year, and you know, when it's really dry, everything suffers. So again, when people say, "Oh, well, these are great in a dry spell," when it's so dry that you're walking across your pasture and it's crunching, and even the plantain is curled over.
Yes.
Like the fingers on your hand, and it's crunching, then you know you get to a stage where everything stops growing, and it's a question of trying to preserve the dry matter that's present. So yes, everything has its limitations, and again, just people need to be aware that, well, I haven't found the silver bullet, so if anybody does, please let me know.
Well, the big question then, where do these sit within your system?
I think where it fits in, I mean, perhaps it is ticking the ecology box. I'm hoping it's going to do good things to the soil underneath, as the diverse root structure we've already discussed plays a part. The theory makes sense, but theory doesn't pay bills. And so I've got to make sure that it actually does perform, and that we get sufficient production of dry matter, we're talking, that grows off these, you know, off these paddocks.
And ideally without the use of any
alternative. Well, or certainly with much reduced.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be a benefit. So, you know, sometimes I think white clover's got forgotten in certain parts of the world. It certainly has. It's a phenomenal plant. Very good in dry weather. Great at establishing nitrogen. When I worked in New Zealand, it was just post-subsidy deregulation and removal. And they couldn't afford artificial nitrogen. And the mainstay of dairy for several years back then was either perennial ryegrass or native grasses and white clover.
Excellent.
And, you know, they were having to be the lowest cost producers in the world, and that's what they fell back on. And so, you know, I think it has an important part to play. And the Irish who fell out of love with it have now, you know, they've trialled it. And we've now learnt really what our grandparents knew, that actually it's really good.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing the trial results from Chagask, actually, and I think there will be some further podcasts on that.
So okay.
It'll be interesting to see, for sure.
Yeah.
If you're a dairy farmer, you've never tried herbal lays before, how would you go about it?
I'd probably try and find out a bit more about direct drilling, unless you're used to inversion tillage. we're told obviously inversion tillage is bad for carbon release, etc. Yeah. But it's a well-proven way of establishing a new crop, and it's also dependent on what you're trying to achieve. So if you've got a field that's quite dirty, you need to turn it over, and you'll know what the weed burden is on your farm. But there are direct drilling techniques or direct establishment techniques that seem to be working. But the main thing is get a tilth like you're reseeding a grass field and have a go. But just be mindful of weed control. It is a challenge. If you've got a very weedy field, or you're going to be in a position where weeds can take hold. So that is something to be aware of, because it's quite labour intensive if you determine to take weed control and herbal lay. You can't just put on the boom sprayer and come in, because you'll have no herbs. You'll have a lay, but there'll be no herbs in it.
And if you went in too quick, I guess if you put too big an area in and you didn't quite nail it, then there's a big risk, isn't there?
I suppose that's no different from establishing anything else, really, because it's new.
Yes.
If you can establish grass, there's no reason why you can't establish a herbal lay. I would encourage anybody just to have a go, because there's nothing like learning yourself. And the truth comes from first-hand experience.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Robert. That's been really interesting. I think I've learned a lot, and I continue to come on the open days. So thank you very much.
It's been a really interesting day for me. Clearly, there are incentives in England to implement herbal lays, but to include the rest of Britain, I think there are some clear benefits to the environment and clear business benefits that we can expect, like reduced artificial fertiliser inputs, drought tolerance, and improved soil structure and health. The challenge is how we balance these advantages with the issues around establishing the lays, weed control, and our new trend of cold springs and slow clover progression in the early season. Organisations like Catchment Sensitive Farming and AHDB have much to do in helping farmers to understand how this fits into their own situation. There are many farmer groups experimenting with herbal lays, and if you'd like to visit some of these trials or want to find out more, you can subscribe to the AHDB podcasts and get in touch with our knowledge exchange team, who can link you up with farms in your area who have started to implement biodiversity into their farming practices. For English farmers, the new SFI handbook is available on the gov.uk website, and you can view our latest analysis on soil payments by googling AHDB Boost for Soils Payments. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.